cliffcentral.com.
Forbes magazine is, you know, it's the magazine that pretty much covers all the most interesting business stories. It covers a lot of individuals who have made massive contributions, people who are tremendously successful. And this morning we're going to meet some of these people. Forbes publishes a list of 30 people under the age of 30 who are doing wonderful things and who are on their way to being tremendously successful. And this morning we're going to meet them. So let's start off with Ancila, who's here from Forbes Africa. Good morning, Ancila. How are you? Let me just put on your microphone here so I don't screw it up. Got so many mics on this thing. There we go. Ancila, there we are. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I heard from your editor the other day. We had him in here for an interview. And he was telling me you were working on this 30 under 30. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting list, right?
Very much so.
I didn't miss anything out when I introduced it. It's pretty much these are the people to look out for.
Yeah, the billionaires of tomorrow, we're calling them.
So the billionaires
they have a lot of
pressure.
Tomorrow. Yes. So it's 30 of the most promising entrepreneurs, and you know, using our formula of searching for those entrepreneurs around the continent. So we think that those 30 people are really people to watch for. And I hope that some of them will be worth $200 million soon. One of them actually promised me that in 5 years they'll
wow.
be there.
That's
so, yeah, Sia said that to me yesterday. So I'm going to hold him to that.
All right. No pressure, Sia. You got no pressure. You reckon you can get to $200 million within the next 5 years?
I can try to run a list, but I think 5 years is enough time for me.
What is the formula that you use to determine who's on this list before we actually meet these two?
Yeah, so it's nothing special, really. It's just a lot of time, work, and effort into finding those young people from around the continent. So firstly, we read a lot. We're journalists, so we have to read.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at entrepreneurs, startups, who's doing what from where, is it interesting or not, how is their hustle going, and then we put all of those lists, names down. So I started this in August last year.
Sure, it's a lot of research.
It's a lot of research, a lot of reading. You come across people, some people are not worth it, some are, but then because obviously
you throw those ones out, right?
Yes, we throw those ones out. But obviously because no matter how much research we do, we can't know literally every business that's on the ground, for example, in Gabon or Sierra Leone. So we open up the nominations to the public in February this year for people to help us with new names. And we got thousands of nominations, but then I sifted through them and we had 250 most promising ones that we really wanted to look at.
And now you still have to get it down to 30.
We had to get it down to 30. So it was calling the police. So they all had to first send me their ID books so that I check them out. So we don't want.
Did you two know that she was checking with the police about you?
Yeah, she did. I remember the calls were quite intense. Like, how old are you? I'm like, I'm this age. Like, send me your stuff. Like, she was quite intense. Like, the vetting process was intense.
Yeah, she had to verify everything.
Yeah.
Let me just introduce you guys quickly because people may have heard. I mean, Sia, I think I've met you before once or twice.
Yes.
Sia Biile is 22 and he is the founder and creative director of The Threaded Man. We'll talk about what that is in a moment. And Mohau Seshwene is the CEO of the Lady Makoti. The Lazy Makoti.
Yeah.
Which is a cooking startup, huh?
Yeah.
And you're going to tell us about that as well.
I will.
All right. So Ancila, of course, is from Forbes Africa. She's busy telling us what the process is that she went through to find the 30, under 30. And so now you're sitting with 200 odd finalists, I suppose. How do you get it down to 30? Do you look at their earnings? Do you look at the size of their businesses, the number of people they employ?
Yes, exactly. We look at all those factors, but I want to make one thing clear. It's not about the money for the 30 under 30. This is not a rich list. It's about the idea and the uniqueness of the idea and what potential the idea has, and also what the entrepreneur, the characteristics of the entrepreneur themselves. So they have this unique idea. Do we think they're able to carry that idea through and be able to be on the reach list one day? So there are some who are making like $10,000, for example. We have a 19-year-old who's the youngest in the list from Sierra Leone, Calvin Doe, who's making 10,000. And we've got people like Uneku on the cover who make an odd 1.5 million. We've got people from Senegal like Fautoma Daba who employ 300 people. So it all varies. So it's not about the money. Yes, we look, you have to be an entrepreneur, you have to be making money. So you have to be making
sure.
some type of money. But the idea and the passion is more important during this process than the money that they're making now.
All right, so let's talk about you two, because we've got lots of really brilliant people in this country who've come up with great ideas, and I think you both are a really good example in your separate ways of what can be done here. A lot of people go, well, if you're not in a big corporation, you're never going to earn serious money. To start your own business is a lot harder, though, right?
It is.
And most people think it's great. You decide your own work hours. You employ whoever you want, all that kind of thing. It's nothing like that. It's hard, struggle.
It's not work, glamorous.
Problems, managing everybody else, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It never stops. So let's start with you, Mohau.
Yes.
How did this whole thing start for you? You were obviously at school and then decided at some point between then and now that you wanted to do things on your own. How did you get to that decision?
Well, actually, from school, I then went to corporate like everybody does. I was an auditor at KPMG. Hated it. And then that's when the Lazy Makoti happened. How it actually started was a friend of mine was due to get married, and she knew that one of the expectations that her in-laws would have would be that she needs to be able to make specifically traditional South African food. And then she then approached me to give her classes, uh-huh, and started recommending other people, and it all sort of snowballed from there, and I could finally leave corporate.
And you decided this has the potential to be a very big business.
This has the potential to be a business. I then went to culinary school, and here we are today.
And how big is your business now?
Currently, we do both the cooking lessons, and we have a range of branded kitchen accessories. So aprons and chopping boards that all get made locally.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
And how long has the business been going?
Since 2014.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's
so
quite
much.
Something. You got a lot of staff?
We do. Well, not a lot of staff.
Hey, anything more than two is a lot of staff, right?
So we employ two ladies that help with the cooking classes. We employ about four people that do the merchandise, all get made locally in the township, actually, in Mamelodi in Pretoria.
Very good.
And yeah, we soon shooting the TV show, actually. Right now we're in pre-production for the TV show that will air on, can I say, ETV?
Yeah, go for it, of course.
On ETV.
That's terrific. When does it start?
September.
Nice. Are you going to be presenting?
Yes, I will.
Very good. Then we'll get to see Mohau on TV. So in all of this, has it given you the feeling of satisfaction that you've done something here that's quite a unique, quite a powerful contribution to society? I mean, it feels good, right?
It feels very good.
And to be on this list?
Really honored to be on the list. Such great validation, you know, that your work is being recognized.
That's terrific. And how about you, Sia? Sia Biele is the creative director. Tell me what the Threaded Man is.
Wow. It gets harder and harder to define because I feel like it just keeps growing. The Threaded Man, first and foremost, is Africa's largest men's fashion and lifestyle portal, but it's grown into an agency that specializes in how brands can market to the African millennials, black millennials at that. Mm-hmm. So from, you know, brands being people or brands being big fashion houses. So it's like a fashion house. So we have a styling department, we have a consultancy, we've got influencer marketing in there. We've got literally everything. So whatever a brand needs, we can make happen.
Now, if you weren't there at the start of it, if you didn't come up with this idea and you yourself weren't a stylish guy, this would have been dead in the water, right?
I wasn't really a stylish guy, hey.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't even creative. In high school, I did accounting. I did a bit of maths.
So you went to the same school as me?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Trust me, that's not a hotbed for creativity or fashion.
So it was, for me, it was a thing of like reading GQ magazine and be like, oh, wow, there's not enough black people here. There's not enough cool fashion. I can do it better. And at that time, I felt no one was utilizing digital in fashion. Brands were not awake to digital in fashion. And I felt I could literally, you know, bring it together and make it happen.
So you saw this opportunity, but putting it together is a whole different thing, right?
Yo, I failed so many times. I mean, I enrolled at fashion school. I failed all my subjects. When everyone was like, they want to be magazine editors, I was like, I want to build this big portal. Everyone's like, no, it's not going to happen. I interned for everybody under the sun in Johannesburg in fashion, from your biggest name to your most unknown names. And no,
some of them didn't even pay you, right?
Didn't pay me, didn't even care. And everyone told me it wouldn't happen. Like, Yeah, and I even at a point gave up, and I was on a flight. I was literally at the air, like at, not on a flight. I was at the bus station, ready to take a bus back to Cape Town, until I got a call about, "Hey, Sia, I can give you an internship."
Wow.
So yeah.
Failure though is an important part of this, right?
Yeah.
And Mohau, I'm sure you could talk about this too. Failing is not a bad thing. People always go, "Oh, if you fail, then you're an embarrassment, you've let everybody down, mm-hmm. it's been a disaster, you yourself are a failure." That's not true.
That isn't true. That's how you learn. Some of these things, especially in the country that we are in, most of us don't have like a family business where you had the opportunity to be in the family business and fail there. So you sort of have to like learn as you go because you don't have that sort of support.
Yeah. I also think looking back at sort of all the failures and where I am now, I think though I don't see them as failures, I see them as part of the journey of being an entrepreneur. Mm. As an entrepreneur, if you don't suffer with your concepts, if you don't go through those hardships, you are not able to truly believe in yourself. I think at that young age, still young, but at that time, I was looking for validation from other people. I needed a David Tlale, I needed a Dion Chang to tell me, "I believe in you." And because most of them closed their doors on me, I had to sit down and be like, "Do I believe in myself?" And that's when things changed for me. And I was like, "I do, and I can do this 100%. And that belief made other people believe in myself. And the reason why I'm the threaded man now and doing what I do is because I believe in myself. So people now believe in it. If I pitch up at a meeting and I believe in this concept and idea, I can sell it.
Right.
So that I feel like it wasn't a failure. It was more of a learning lesson to validate myself before others can validate me.
How important is failure in all of this, Ansela?
And if I'm to add on that, the nice thing about all the 30 people, they've all failed.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. Mm-hmm. None of them had it easy. They all started something, failed. Some have started 5 businesses and they all failed. And this is their 6th and this is the one that's doing better. Mm-hmm. Because they're learning as they go. And one important thing that we're also looking at, I asked them all to tell me their story. What makes you different? There's so many entrepreneurs. Why do you think you deserve to be on a list like this? And all their stories, if you go through the list, are so amazing. It's from a place of trouble, some of them. Some of them were in poverty and had a lot to change and to live for and to fight for. So that's what we're looking for, not just entrepreneurs born rich and they have everything. They all had
that's
nothing.
Easy. It's easy if you've got, like Donald Trump. I mean, come on. The guy inherited millions from his father. Mm. How hard was it for him to keep those millions going?
So they appreciate it more and they work harder and they know what struggle is like. So they try to elevate and elevate other people to create more jobs, which is what's important.
Well, tell me, who else are the people on this list? I mean, are most of them from sort of sub-Saharan Africa, most of them from West Africa? Where is the epicenter of success on this continent?
So what we tried to do was to balance everything up because we don't want to give preference to one part of the continent more mm-hmm. than the other. But with that said, we also didn't want to leave out people that deserve to be on the list because they're from a certain part of the continent and put somebody who doesn't deserve. So impressively enough, I've been saying that people from East Africa and West Africa are so impressive. Southern Africa, we got to wake up.
Oh, really? So we're a little bit behind.
We're a little bit, not a little. The innovation, the ideas that they have, they're in e-commerce, in technology.
And they've got a huge market in places like Nigeria too, which helps.
Which helps. So they're doing a lot of work. You find 16-year-olds selling stuff and employing 10 or so people. So there are lots of people there that are really doing something. I think also it's because of the attitudes, or maybe it's part of their culture. This entrepreneurial spirit is part of their culture because all of them tell me that they started selling something when they were 7. When they're 6 years old, the mother will say, "Go to the farm and go to sell the vegetables after." So that's where their entrepreneurship spirit started. So we have a lot of people from there, but in South Africa, we've got 5. So we have all of that balanced up. We've got a lady by the name of Helen from Tanzania, which is also this part of the continent. We've got a guy from Zimbabwe, but mm-hmm. we've got people from as far as Madagascar on the list.
Wow.
We've got people from Gambia, from Gabon, who also made it into the list. Kenya, a number of people. Ghana, wow. Impressive. Yeah,
Ghana's interesting, huh? Because Ghana kind of punches way above its weight.
It does.
What do you think that is?
I think basically it's just the ideas. You know, West Africans, it's not just Ghana, even the Nigerians, you know, even when we meet them and just have a conversation with them, they just want to do something. So on the ground, there's so many problems there. And I guess because of the politics of the countries there and service delivery, etc., the young people feel it's their need. They need to wake up and do something for themselves.
Mohal and Sia, what is the key here? Because I've heard from a couple of people that actually in order to establish a successful business, you need to solve a problem for people. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to do something that isn't being done or that you could do better. Mm-hmm. That's about right.
I think it's a combination of, you know, be able to solve a problem and be passionate about the thing that you're doing. For myself, my passion is South African culture. So at the heart of the Lazy Makoti is a promotion and I guess a cultivation of love for the South African culture. And I'm doing that through food, which is something I'm very passionate about.
Well, I mean, it's also something that everybody needs, right? Uh-huh. So yeah. There's the cultural requirement, but it's also... like you need food to live. So this is not going to be something that you don't use often.
Luckily, everybody's always going to need to eat, yes.
And plus, for a lot of black women who are growing up in South Africa now, mm-hmm. there isn't necessarily the emphasis on traditional stuff there used to be. So now if they need to do it, they suddenly go, oh my God, mm-hmm. I'm getting married, or there's some kind of requirement within the family, or there's a grandparent visiting or something. I've got to do something.
Yeah. And actually how we started, my friend went looking for a cooking school that could teach her about traditional South African food.
So what kind of food do we do? What? Mohodu,
all of them. Yeah? Mohodu, the samp, the steamed bread, the chakalaka, all of that. Hmm. So she went looking for a cooking school in South Africa, could not find a cooking school that could teach how to make traditional South African food. So she found everything from Asian to Italian to every single thing. We are here celebrating everybody but us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you ever go back to like KPMG? to auditing? You'd never do that again.
Never.
Never.
Ever. Ever.
It doesn't matter how much they pay. Ever. Are you making money?
Yes, I am.
That's good. All right, Sia, how about you? Would you ever go back to kind of doing internships at fashion houses or trying to edit other people's magazines?
Over my dead body.
Yeah.
Never. Never, ever, 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 ever.
You making money?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Good man. So how do we scale these things up? Because that's always the next question. People go, fine. You both have very successful businesses now. Do you see any impediment, any reason why you shouldn't be international?
Not at all.
Not at all.
I mean, I get asked questions about that all the time since it's, you know, it's fashion. And I don't see a reason at all. I think, you know, this past weekend, I was the fashion director for the Summers. So I was working on that.
Oh, yeah. How did that go?
It went really well.
I missed the Summers. But so, did you have to sort some easy out?
Yes, I did. Uh-oh. Everybody. So I did that, you know, this past weekend. And, you know, now the next step for me is how can I branch out internationally? So I'm heading over to New York for a conference there where I'll be presenting my business to companies like Condé Nast and Vogue magazine.
Nice.
You know, where I'll get time to spend. I'll spend some time with them and taking them through my business, learning from them. So for me, that's the next step. You know, I'm, you know, we are both millennials here, and we have a global view of the world, and we are proud of our culture. We are proud of where we come from, and there's no reason why we cannot compete with the best overseas and understanding those markets.
Do you think that in 5 years' time, you'll be a very different person in terms of where your business is and what kinds of things you'll be doing?
I feel like I'm a different person every week. When you're running a business from a young age,
it's evolution.
You leap. I mean, from where I was beginning of the year to where I am now, I never knew by this time of the year I'd be the fashion director for the Summers. I never knew that I'd have done two international campaigns for big brands like H&M or Tommy Hilfiger. I never knew I would be going to New York. So yeah.
But what are the toughest things? Because those are all the amazing things that you've achieved, and that's all terrific, and you wouldn't have guessed that you could have been doing these things. But what are the hardest parts of this?
The hardest parts of it, I mean, even behind those incredible projects, there's fights. You know, when you're presenting to a Tommy Hilfiger, the global brand, and they don't understand black people and don't understand why you're using black models. It's a real thing where they say, we won't give you the budget you want because you're using black models. Therefore, you know, this won't sell as it should be. So they cut your budget in half. So there's that as well. And also just being appropriated. And also in the space that I'm in with the threat of man is that I'm threatening a lot of jobs. You know, I'm threatening agencies. So before, agencies were the go-to people for brands. Now, I'm this young guy who can just work with brands directly. So each and every day, there's a lot of those battles where people are trying to take business away from me, or, you know, an agency wants to be involved and interact with that. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff, and it's tough.
Have you had to argue with friends and people you actually liked and...
Yes.
You're quite ruthless.
I don't have a lot of friends anymore because of business. Yeah. You know, where guys who are 22 are in varsity worrying about partying and girls and finishing off their degrees. I'm worried about people's salaries, you know, keeping overheads, hitting profit targets. I've got a board of directors who are my business partners where I have to present to them what I'm doing. I always have to think ahead. You know, if I did this gig, you know, what am I doing next? You know, the fashion industry in South Africa is still a new industry. I'm the only one doing the sort of thing that I do. So each and every single day, I'm paving the way. I'm knocking to new doors. Like the whole thing about the Summers as well, to get there, it wasn't just given to me. There were a lot of talks like, could we trust a 22-year-old to take care of the Summers from a fashion perspective? Like, can you do it? You know, I took a lot of backlash. Refilo Ramakhosi, the CEO, took a lot of backlash, a lot of media backlash. So, you know, it felt like everybody wanted me to fill in this position. So,
and being, but it's, you get it's through all it. Good and well being 22 and in business, but you don't get instant credibility.
Not at all.
Like, people automatically assume just because you're young, you can't do things properly, or you don't have experience, so you'll screw it up.
I mean, I walked into a meeting last week with an international brand, and they were like, wow, we just read online you're 22. What are you doing here? So there's a lot of that as well. You're not a veteran. You're not, you know, it's tough.
Yeah, and you asked about whether or not we think we can build global brands. I completely believe that. That's what I'm trying to do with the Lazy Makoti. I would like for someone to be in Australia, London, wherever, and interact with the Lazy Makoti brand, whether it's through our merchandise or any of our products, and instinctively think of home. So that nostalgia, that you being overseas and thinking of home, and I'd like the brand to represent that.
And as you said, there isn't really anywhere you can learn about this. There isn't a chain of restaurants that does authentic African stuff. You could become the person who's the conduit for all of that.
Yes, that is the goal, for the Lazy Makoti to be truly, proudly South African, a real heritage brand of this country.
Yeah.
All around the world.
And also, when brands ask me, do you think you can build a global brand since you're 22? I'm like, look at Mark Zuckerberg. And they just keep quiet.
That's right.
Look at Justin Bieber. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of young people internationally who are killing it. But when it comes to us locally, there's still this stigma about us South Africans or Africans that we're not on the same level as internationals. And that is incorrect.
Do you have, you know, whenever there's success, then there's jealousy. And whenever there's jealousy, then there's also family who come in and try to get their share of the action. Do you have to say to your family, look, I'm sorry, I can't give you a job. I'm trying to run a business here.
Well, actually, with
or
the
do
list,
you employ your family?
With the list coming out, I've actually had calls. Hi, can I borrow 100,000 rand?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I don't make
someone
that kind of money.
Someone you don't even know, right?
Someone I haven't spoken to in like 10 years. Someone I went to high school with. Can I borrow 100 grand?
And, my mom the other day is like, what is your net worth if you have to be on Forbes? I'm like,
do you know? Have you thought about it?
Yeah, I do. I do know about it.
What do you think it is?
I asked my accountant when I saw the Forbes thing. I was like, listen, what is actually my net worth?
What did they say?
No comment.
Oh, come on.
No comment.
Are we talking upwards of 10 million?
No comment.
Come on. Wink twice if it's more than 100 million.
Okay, no, definitely not 100 million. Not 100 million. Like okay, that,
you,
I can confirm.
You want to get there. You want to get there.
Yeah, right? The incredible pressure. It says on the list, the future billionaires.
Yeah, $200 million. Like, we
now,
need $200 million.
How much are you concerned that South Africa is a tough enough place to make it in? Because there's a lot of competition here. There are a lot of people all trying to make it. Mm-hmm. But the economy is slow at the moment. There's not as much growth as there was 2-3 years ago, for example. The currency is a problem if you're going to go international. And all of these things must play into your plans for future expansion. Mm-hmm. So how concerned are you about those?
Well, on my end, I think I'm in the best time right now to operate Threaded Man, because a lot of brands are desperate, especially fashion brands, because there's a lot of brands coming into the country And there's a lot of brands trying to compete for the consumer. And when they're all trying to compete for the consumer, who are they trying to compete for? The millennials, the guys who are on Instagram. But
my point is still that with an economy that's growing at 0.6%, those millennials don't have money. Yeah. Not like they used to.
I haven't really experienced it because my growth has doubled since last year.
Really? So it doesn't matter what's going on?
It does matter to me because I do read about it now, and I am wary of it, and I am going to New York.
But it hasn't affected you.
But it hasn't. I've been waiting and been prepared for it when it does affect me. But I haven't had to retrench people. I haven't had to make drastic changes into the business. Okay. I've had to streamline a few things where, you know, in the office we have about 20 people, you know, that work and operate. And then I've had to have 10 freelancers, such as photographers, who don't need to sit in the office.
Right.
So it's just streamlining those processes a bit more rather than having a photographer sit in the office all day when they don't have to.
Right.
But it hasn't really affected me. I did expect it to slow down, but I mean, it hasn't really.
Good for you.
So
Then you're in a
maybe. I don't know.
That's terrific. Happening. No, there are businesses that back the trend, and good for you if you are.
Mm-hmm. I think both good and bad. I think the lazy makoti happened at the exact right time when everybody is now conscious of being African and starting to wake up to celebrating us. But I think one of the challenges for me is I'm really hoping to keep production local. That's one of the things that are very important to me with the Lazy Makoti, for all the touch points to be truly South African. So that's one of the challenges, trying to keep production local. It's cheaper to manufacture elsewhere.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, especially when it comes to, and Sia, this is something you obviously will face. It's like when it comes to textiles and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
If you manufacture clothing outside of South Africa,
it's cheaper.
It's way cheaper, right?
Yeah, I think.
But then you're not supporting local industry.
Yeah, you need to think about what contribution do you want to make to the country.
I think that's the next frontier for the Threaded Man, is that we're growing at such a, we're becoming more and more of a big pillar in the African fashion space. And now I'm working into looking into the textile industry. You know, I'm working in line with the DFF to grow the textile industry in Durban. And it's tough here. It's really, really hard because people don't even know that you actually
need... The textile industry is kind of owned by a couple of families.
Exactly. It's owned...
And it's hard to break
it's
in.
It's owned by a group of about 6 families in the country locally, and it's bad. So there's that as well. I mean, overseas, you go to Italy, there's actually farms that, you know, you have literally material farms and textile farms. Mm-hmm. And here we don't have that. And also here we have a low level of skill. You know, we don't have people who can make handbags by hand here in terms of like the Louis Vuitton style kind of vibe. That so there's a lot of skill that we need here. We don't have people who can weave certain ways in terms of doing textiles. We use specifically two styles of doing textiles. In Italy, they use over 34 styles of doing textiles. People can paint on it's really, really. So there's that as well here that we actually need to upskill as well, you know. So and that will take at least 20 years to get down the line. But the global, I mean, if you look at Africa is seen as the sleeping tiger in fashion. So the African fashion industry is worth $35 billion at the moment, and it's probably going to double over the next 10 years. And a lot of brands, if you notice, are starting to come into the country. So you're seeing a lot of, last week there was a Gucci launch, before that there was a Tom Ford launch. So a lot of these brands are literally looking into Africa and wanting part of that $35 billion.
So who are the most powerful people in fashion in South Africa?
The most powerful people in fashion?
Who are the most influential people in South African fashion? I mean, we'll put you in the list, but who else?
I wouldn't say people. I don't know. I would say we have a lot of bloggers in the country who are actually a big driving force more than ever before in South African fashion.
Do people listen to them?
Yes, definitely. I would say musicians in this country are some of the biggest driving forces of local fashion, because our country is driven by pop culture, not by fashion. Mm-hmm. So a lot of youngsters who look up to a Ricky Rick or a Casper or an AKA, they'll see his outfit and want to dress like he does. Mm-hmm. You know, they won't look at a fashionable guy, like don't look at the Lusula Boyson from SF Fashion Week and be like, oh, I want to dress well. Where in America, people look at Anna Wintour and they're like, oh, I want to dress like Anna. So here it's a bit different. We're very pop culture and culture driven. We love music. And so music plays a lot of big part in translating trends to people. And only recently now, because of Instagram, that's where people like myself and other bloggers, we have been able to rise to that level where people now follow us and are influenced by us in terms of fashion. So,
how important is social media to your business, the Lazy Makoti?
Mm-hmm. I was actually getting there. How I started was on social media. I had a Facebook page and Instagram page where I'd like share recipes, and it all sort of snowballed from there. And that's when, obviously, when you meet like other industry people, like actual chefs, mm-hmm. and they start asking, oh, so you're just the Instagram girls that likes cooking. That's when I decided, okay, maybe I should go to culinary school and actually get this qualification. But social media is very important to the business, especially now. I don't think you can be in business right now and not be on social media.
Yeah, I also think, you know, when I look at my business, is that it predominantly revolved around social media. But now I've grown it into a space where it's important. As much as I think social media is critical and important, it's also important for me to think outside social media. Because I always ask myself, if social media had to shut down today, do I still have a job and a successful business?
Yeah.
And I can probably say, yes, I do. Because right. My business, as much as social media is, it started with it, I also feel that it's also important to grow it beyond that as well. Mm-hmm. You know, to always also be on the ground and actually sell things to people. I also feel that because of social media, we tend to invest everything, especially with brands, you tend to invest everything in digital, where it's good to have the balance of both.
Yeah, and also, as you rightly say, you've got to actually look at it and go, could I survive without this?
Yeah.
Would I still have a successful business without these things?
Yes.
I think everybody's obsessed at the moment with, you know, how many people follow you on Instagram, how many likes you get for a certain picture. And that's not business.
Yeah.
That's not going to earn you money.
Yeah, I feel like social media is just the window display in the shop. It's right. Not the actual job.
You need to get people into your shop and buying your stuff.
And yesterday at the dinner with the minister, Vusi Tambogwaya said that the thing about Instagram is that the post is instant, but the money behind what you post isn't. Mm. And that's what people don't understand. So when they see Louis Vuitton shoes, they think, oh, wow, Gareth just earned that money and now he's posting. It's actually, no, Gareth's been working for the last 10 years and he actually got into a place.
And also there's a lot of showing off. You don't know whether someone actually has that stuff or not.
Exactly. Yeah.
They might just take a picture of someone else and pretend it's theirs.
You don't know if it's actually
true. Or steal other people's pictures. I've had people steal my pictures and post as their own pictures.
You're kidding?
Yeah.
Do you find them and tell them and call them out?
Not anymore, hey. It's a waste of time because you get seen as like you're a bully.
Yeah, just let it go, right?
Let it go, yeah.
Well, listen, you two are terrifically successful people already. I wish you only the best going forward. I think that you are exactly the examples of the kinds of entrepreneurs that will make this country great and that will help us to get the economy growing at more than 0.6%. Because if your businesses succeed, we all succeed.
Uh-huh. And actually, the plan with the Lazy Makoti is to upskill rural and township women.
Beautiful.
To give these classes.
Because if I think
of an expert in traditional South African food, it's the mama that makes it every day.
And she's probably also in that huge section of the population that's unemployed.
Yeah. Or underemployed. And just to demonstrate the value of that skill.
And if I might just add on that, now that they are on the list, this is a challenge for you guys to create more jobs and go and teach other people. Because the thing that we noticed lately with entrepreneurs, I was telling them last night at the dinner, is that they're being successful on their own. They need to give back. Mm-hmm. Go and give talks. We don't need people to fund businesses anymore. We need people to teach people how to run businesses, to start businesses from nothing. You started your businesses with zero rand. Yeah. So other people can too. So go tell your stories. Tell the people how you did it so that they can do this. That's the purpose of this Forbes list. It's not just to only celebrate you, but it's for you guys to go and inspire other people so that Africa can be a greater continent that we know it can be.
I noticed that you also caught up with a couple of the people from last year's list. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because, you know, it shows that there's follow through too. It's all good and well to publish a list like this, but if some of the people fall out, you want to know what happened to them.
You want to know what happened, definitely. So we're going to be doing that with them again next year. And the list comes with a lot of opportunities. Some are being called, you know, to do jobs with the UN and more opportunities and business partners and people trying to help them grow their businesses. So it's an important list to be on. More money for them, definitely.
So no pressure, you two. Yeah. Don't screw up, all right?
Never.
If you screw up, we're going to be in next year's edition as the people who, yeah, the people who screwed it up. But listen, as you said, even if you did, failure is part of the exercise, and maybe your third, fourth, fifth business is the one that's going to make you a billionaire. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's if you've got that hunger to do your own thing, and you've got that hunger to change things and help people and figure things out, you will do well. That's what both of you are already doing. So thank you for coming to see us.
Thank you so much. What a
pleasure and privilege to meet you both.
Thank you.
All right. We'll keep an eye on you here too, and I'll make sure that Ancila fills us in if anything exciting happens.
I will, definitely.
All right. Very good. So this is the latest edition of Forbes Africa, which you can get. I see Trevor Noah's in there. I see Johan Rupert's in there. And of course, the 30 under 30 list, which is precisely what we were talking about this morning with these two very bright shining stars, Siabile and Mohau. I did pronounce your surname right the first time, right?
You did.
Sishwen. Got you. Loud and clear. All right, you two. Thank you very much for coming to see us.
Thank you.
What an interesting morning. CliffCentral.com.